Welcome back to another episode of the Reseller's Mindset Podcast. My name is Mike, also known as the Used Book Guy on YouTube, along with my friend and fellow full-time reseller, Johnny B. We help people start and grow their reselling businesses from the ground up. We also have a weekly Zoom call and private Discord for all YouTube members. Head on over to youtube.com/usedbookguy to join the channel and gain access to the full-length podcast, Zoom call, and private Discord today. Let's get into this week's episode.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Reseller's Mindset Podcast. Mike next to Johnny. Johnny came up with a good topic, and it is kind of, we both experience this, and it's low cost, no cost versus paying up for items. And when I started, I was always the low cost, no cost guy. And I think everybody kind of starts there. And I think you evolve into being willing to spend more on items as you grow a business, because guess what happens when you grow a business? You have more money to spend. And it's a marvelous thing when you can leverage your money to make more money. And that's kind of, I guess, the whole purpose of making money is to use your money to make more money. But low cost, no cost, the first thing that comes to my mind, dude, is those damn free book pickups I used to do. It's free based on what I'm paying out of my pocket, but time and work with the low cost, no cost model will destroy you before you even get your business off the ground. What comes to your mind first with this topic?
I mean, it's definitely with the buying material. It's getting it, like going somewhere, finding that marketplace. It's free. It's on the porch. Come get it. You'll get it. And you pick up the books. Why are they sticky? Why is my hand now sticky? Why am I in this situation? I would pay not to be in this situation. Or it's all garbage, or they're all water damaged, or they're broken. Not all, and sometimes there's winners in there. There are, I'm not going to lie. But man, is that a lot of work and time lost, because normally you got to travel. It ain't coming to you. And it's at the end of the day, unless you're broke and you're just starting your business, it is, you will quickly realize that is not for you. That's not to say that my consignment business is not necessarily the same thing, as it's coming to me, and usually what's in there is pretty good. And if it's not, I have an immediate course of action, as it's going to the other consigner lady that I'm working with, or the trash can if it's too badly damaged or broken. But a secondary thing it'll probably lead into is equipment. I could be printing my Amazon labels with printer paper on the Brothers printer and taping them on, or I can get a thermal label printer and buy thermal labels. I much prefer the latter now, but early on in your days, that seems like a good expense. Or I'm sorry, earlier on in your days, you already got the printer, you already got printer paper. And again, if you're broke or just starting your business, that may be the play for you. So I think a lot of it is, like you said, when you have no money, you gotta do it. And it's hard to separate when you get away from that, because we all don't like to spend money necessarily, but I will spend money if it'll make my life easier. That goes with software too. Yeah, I could do my whole Amazon business off of the Amazon platform, but I'm not going to do it.
I agree.
I'll pay not to do it.
I think once you start making money and your business starts cash flowing, you literally need to pay to become more efficient. And that just means, like Johnny said, whether that's, you know, supplies that actually save you time, or software, or even employees, right? Like there's so many that go, so much that goes into this. And I was this way forever. I was so stubborn to spend any money, and now I'm almost the complete opposite. Like I don't mind spending up, right, in quotation marks, because spending up in the reselling world is like, if you're spending more than like $10 an item on a book, CD, or DVD. But like if you can walk in and buy Easton Press for $10 a pop, and they have an infinite amount of them, like we're clearing out
20,
the bank.
But okay, 10's fine too.
Yeah, we're going to clear out the bank account today. But I still think a lot of people, if they were presented with that opportunity, they would be hesitant, because we're so accustomed to the 50 cents a dollar per item that if we have to spend a little bit more than that, even though we know, you know that what that thing's got value, you still just, you're so scared to pull the trigger and spend maybe 5-10x what you usually do on an item. But the data's there. I don't understand why people are so hesitant to be like, well, I'm only going to make, because usually in some of these cases, when you spend more, if you look at the video game market, right, they have price sharding. Depending on what it is, it's usually like 70, 80% value of the item. So they will pay you 80% for the video game, and they only expect to make 20% on the back end. And in reselling world, we're probably thinking to ourselves, like, that's insane. But no, there's amazing, huge businesses out there, video game businesses that operate off that 20% margin. And here we are in the media land, like, if I got to spend more than $2, I'm going to have to take out a loan. It's crazy to me.
Now, on that note, I saw something on the Book Flipper community. I think it was their last Books and Bourbon thing they did at some location that wasn't on like one of their meetups or whatever. I think it was their last video, honestly. And the guy they had on, I forget his name, but you can Google Book Flipper community YouTube and find it. He said that he was going to half price books to source, and he noticed all the scanners were at the clearance rack. And he decided, instead of waiting to get his turn at the clearance rack, to go throughout the store and buy items. And he was buying $5, $10 items. He was spending this amount of money to make $20, $50, $100, while everybody else was fighting at the clearance rack. And I promise you, he made more money than everybody at the clearance rack by doing that. He paid up in the same facility that everybody else was at, that was a reseller, to make probably 10 times as much money than everybody else, even though he was spending 4 to 6 times more money per item. That stuck with me, and it's one of the smartest things that I've seen a recording on that someone said for good information. And that is such a good tip. If you're in the library sale and you're, I don't know, you're just going looking at their pricing chart and you're just going for the cheap stuff, well, everybody else is going to do that too. Go for the more expensive things. They're going to hit that last.
I've seen that, dude. Right now, some library sales I go to, they will have like a usually one or two folding tables of items that are individually priced. Nobody goes to them, dude.
No.
I don't have the knowledge because a lot of it is like the stuff you deal in, right? It's like the antique books. Like, so I have no clue. If I go to that
That'd be my
table,
first hit. And everybody else is over there crowded,
I'm
fighting
there
over
for an hour,
seats.
dude. So I lose if I stop at that table. But I'll tell you right now, when people go through the doors like crazy lunatics, there ain't nobody stopping at that table, dude.
I'll hit the most expensive section and then followed by the mass markets, and then I'll fight with everybody else, whatever else is left. That's my go-to for libraries. Well, that, and I mentioned this before, and if you're not doing this, you should ask the sale person, it's probably a librarian or a volunteer, hey, where's your bookstore at the sale? So I'll hit 1, 2, 3, and then I'll play with the general public as number four. I'm telling you, going where everybody else is not, or at least not first, is a big play.
Fun fact, I'll follow up on this with real life experience. Library sale, like Johnny said, they got a little bookstore upstairs. When you check out at the library sale, Johnny, they give you a coupon for the bookstore upstairs, right? So I'm like, I was there the longest out of anybody, right? So I already got like three IKEA bags. I'm like, you know what? I got this $5 off $10 coupon for the bookstore, right? So everybody's already basically checked out. That's a reseller. I'm figuring I'm not going to find nothing up there. Dude, I went up there, I filled up another bag. I'm like, what is going on out here? Like, why are, I don't understand.
And a lot of mine, they'll charge me the library sale prices for the stuff.
I
'Cause
paid up.
yeah, well, you can do that too, but you also got a coupon. So did you really? And they don't mind that, honestly, because you know what doesn't sell at the book sale? It's going to that bookstore a lot of the times, or back in the back room. And again, you're doing it once. Like, you didn't go another day. You did it the same day. I'm the same way. I'm going to do everything the same day. You're saving gas money and you're already there. And I want to say you're going to save time by doing this too. Let's see another one. Let's take it out of libraries. Let's go to, I don't know, a thrift store, right? Here's one that I don't recommend for new people because you don't have the cash flow for it. But again, once you got some money in your pocket, and I used to do this, I used to go up there and be like, how much for your entire book section? Because it's quicker for me to load it up in my car than to work on their shelves and try to scan and or decide if it's eBay. But I was set up for that. I could take it home, I could process it on my equipment much faster, and have a solution for it to go away. But the counter argument is, well, Johnny, you're not cherry picking. You're taking a whole lot of junk. Yeah, but as long as you got a junk solution, it's no problem. At the time, it was my bookstore and or other donation places. Because I was pulling for both eBay and Amazon. I still pull for eBay and Amazon. So I can take in a lot more than if I was just one or the other, honestly.
The same with flea markets, dude. I've been to some flea markets this year for the first time in my reselling career. And those dudes all want it all gone, right? They usually just clear out storage unit lockers, or they stumble upon a couple thousand DVDs. I even found profitable textbooks at the damn flea market, just, and they're all in the boxes that are on the ground. Like, it would just be so much easier to be like, hey, $100 for everything. All right, boom, wheel it up, gone.
Right. Another tip that people don't realize, when you do that the way I'm describing, and you ask the key question after you're done paying, now that you've got proof of concept at a new place, you got any more in the back?
That's it.
Instant backroom access, probably. If they said yes to you buying it all in the first place. If they said no, then you're probably not going to get backroom access even at that point.
I think because, specifically to like the media, though, like what you're saying, they don't want to deal with the books, right? They'd rather use that floor space for clothes or something else that maybe has a higher sell-through. So what you're saying is you clear out the whole front. And if they got it in the back and you're willing to take that stuff too, they might be okay with you getting
Royal
it in the
red
back.
Carpet point at that stage. How can I help you, sir? Do you need anything, sir? Can I help you load your car, sir? Your life gets a little easier when you're buying in bulk. And yeah, bulk comes with its own problems. I'm not saying it doesn't. You got a lot of trash you got to deal with, but there's also a lot of upside too.
There is. I mean, you just got to be willing. I tell everybody that starts out in this business, right? Because in Amazon land, we kind of tell everybody 3 months until you actually get your first like positive payout, right? So 3 months is a long time to go with, you know, not having money, especially if you're spending considerable amounts of money on inventory. So I tell everybody, like, all right, well, let's get out there, right? Let's get to the free little libraries. Let's pick up some free book pickups. Let's kind of grind it out in the beginning to kind of build your business. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that can still exist. But I think what happens here and what happened to me is, as you start to grow and as you have capital, you start to realize that, okay, my time is better spent not doing a free pickup and maybe going to a record shop and spending $5 per item and buying some of the better quality stuff. So there is kind of like almost a transition, but you also can still continue to do like the free pickups. Like yours is almost free pickup with your consignment, right? Because you don't know what I'm putting in the box. And I'll straight up, I tell Johnny all the time, I don't know what I'm putting in the box. I just know the box says Johnny and it's a book that doesn't have a dust jacket. This guy can figure it out. And if he burns it, he burns it. I don't know. But like, it's cool to see that you have a consignment business that is almost like free pickup, because you don't know what's going to show up at your door. And you don't have like a set value of like what you expect people to send. And that's like the biggest appeal to me, because I have no idea if the book in there is $1,000 or it's worthless, right? Or whatever it
It
may
would
be.
be a hell of a lot harder if I was trying to sell it all, but I'm not. I have a lady who deals with it, and some of the stuff I send her. So it's like a siphon, right? Like I'll take the best stuff or the fun stuff, because I do like, there's some things I just enjoy listing, like my little mass markets. I'll keep those, and then I'll send her the other stuff, and then she'll do the same thing. Okay, I can list this as a singleton. I'm going to try to make a bundle or a lot here. This is the store credit pile. And this is, I don't know what she does with this. Make compost out of it for all I know. So it's a filtration stuff. And me and her were joking the other day, like, you need a junk for your junk person. Like, there needs to be a third, like the bottom barrel flea market guy. He'll just take it and pay you a whole dollar for it or something. But yeah, if you're not set up to deal with it or handle it, you can try to figure it out. I've spent an exorbitant amount of time figuring some of the junk removal stuff out that I don't have to deal with. What's the quickest and easiest? And for me, it's just a dedicated person that'll just take it. I think you have somebody for your other stuff too that comes every now and then to pick stuff up. It's way easier that way. And here's another one, and we'll go into disc media here. So if you're a disc-only media person, and Max was kind of ragging on the JFJ machine, but I was like, look, Max, it's not meant for huge volume sellers. It's meant for 50 or 60 here for you to do here and there. You know, if you're doing disc media full-time, you probably need to upgrade beyond the JFJ and be angling to get a master at some point. And there's machines in between the JFJ and the master, of course, but you got to know what you're your business. And if your business needs a master machine, for those that don't know, that cleans 50 at a time opposed to one at a time. It's probably the route you should go. I mean, you can buy 50 JFJs, but good luck.
It's I'll give a perfect example of this. When Deb was growing her cat and dog toy business and the embroidery machines, you start out with one and it's got one needle, right? So every time it has to change a color, you got to change the color, rethread it. Well, she got to the point where, okay, I have enough money. I'm going to buy a 7-needle machine. So now you have 7 colors. You don't have to change colors at all. You don't have to really, it's kind of more hands off. It's the same way what we're talking about. You have to invest in the business in ways that make sense. And I think a lot of people, I know for a fact, a lot of people are just like, they just buy the most fanciest shit for no reason. Like, it'd be stupid for me to buy a master resurfacer, right? Because like you said, I do between 25 and 50 discs a month. So like, why would I go spend the thousands of dollars? That doesn't make sense. But I think a lot of resellers, as cheap as we are, we make some stupid buying decisions on crap we're never going to really use or need at the scale to justify the purchase.
What's up, Amazon sellers? We wanted to take a second to talk about GoToLister, the software me and Johnny both use to list and manage our inventory and grow our businesses. With the fastest listing speeds out there and built-in profit analytics, it's a no-brainer. Easily and quickly have items available for sale using 2D barcodes and get more for your items with its built-in smart pricing. Make sure to check out the 30-day free trial at gotolister.com/Mike or using the link in the description below.
Right, absolutely. And here's another one, your general shipping. I would rather peel a self-peel adhesive envelope or poly than have to tape a bajillion items, like every corner and every seam. It's so much slower. It's cheaper, way cheaper, but I don't want to. The time is not worth it because the time equals more dollars I can be doing, being able to do something else. So most of all of my shipping supplies are self-sealed or tab-locked, like no tape required. I don't have to tape in my business anymore.
Mine are the same way. Besides taping those boxes, like for Amazon, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, outside of Amazon boxes, fair. I need to look. Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe there's tablock boxes for Amazon. But
there's those boxes. They have the boxes that actually come with the pieces of tape for the box, but you still would have to take the tape off and put it on. But they actually comes with the pieces of tape for that specific box. But it's so weird, right? Because it's not even just inventory based. Like everything me and you really are talking about have been like almost equipment process based that have kind of leveled us up versus just spending more on inventory, right? But I don't think there's really a right or wrong with the free pickup or spending more money besides your time. If you have an infinite amount of time and you don't have all the cherry picking sources, then you can do all the free pickups. I think it's going to be different case to case, but I do think it's as you grow. And in my experience, I don't do the free pickups anymore because I have enough sources to go out there and buy. I will still buy in bulk. I have no problem with buying 2,000 DVDs at 10 cents a piece, right? And it's almost like a free pick. I'm just paying for it, but I know I'm going to make the money on the back end. Those kind of deals really don't exist with books. Like, I would never pay for books again because I don't have the knowledge. Like, you can look at a collection and be like, okay, this is worth X amount. For me, the only book pickups I ever did were free. I did pay 15 cents a pound, and I did kind of knock some. I had some crazy good bulk pickups at 15 cents a pound. Like, shit people wouldn't believe, you know, like the first
edition. I had the same thing at my store. I was also charging 15 cents a pound because of you, and that worked great. I mean, there was a lot of I'm just throwing money away here, but there was more of this is solid for Amazon or this is really solid for eBay.
I think it's hard to lose, honestly, as long as you're not like, I mean, what would be too much to pay per pound for books? Like, if it's going to be at least 500, 1,000 pounds, like, you probably could still pay, like, 50 cents a pound and still come out ahead in most cases. Like, I've never had a bulk
buy. Even if it was, like, all Harley Quinn romance novels that you're just going to have to lot up, honestly, you're still going to make money. You're not going to make as much money, but I still think you're going to be in the positive.
Yeah, I think you're always going to come out ahead monetarily. The catch is the time, right? But if we're just going based off the numbers of what you spend versus what you make, 99% of the time with media, you're going to come out ahead. with the dollar amount. The question is, how long does it take you to get through all of this stuff? And that's kind of the big sinkhole people run into is, okay, I have 2,000 DVDs now. What the hell am I going to do with them? And like Johnny said, I give them away. I scan through them. I throw them up in Facebook Marketplace. They meet me at the storage unit. They're gone. I don't even ask for a penny. And if they show up, I'm like, hey, I might have more next week. And can I reach back out to you? I got one guy that's come multiple times now for the books after I scan through them. He's like, yeah, I got a library. I like loading up my little free libraries all around. And yeah, just reach back out to me. So this guy's come multiple times with his minivan. I'll help load him in. Like that's how you're going to grow this business. You can't try to chase every book, every dollar.
No, absolutely. You could try, but you're gonna. It's just you. If you had a team, maybe you could treat it like a farm or utilize all parts of the buffalo kind of mentality, the horns, the hooves, the skin, the meat, and all that. But until you've got a force, and I mean a workforce to help you with that, it's not worth it, your personal endeavor. Yeah, will you miss out on a few dollars? Yeah, but you should be concentrating on the most money on that pile and not worry about the lower, like doing lots on eBay. That's a little bit more work. You shouldn't waste your time with that early on. And unless it's already done for you, they've already lotted it. It's just one box of Harley Quinn. Okay, fine, good to go. It's one listing. Or not even bother with it, just drop it off. There's so much money making opportunity. It's just where we spend our focus, and it should always be with the least amount of time for the most amount of money is always the answer. And then there's a totem pole of everything that follows that. Another thing that I've experienced, dealt with myself, is when I went to an estate sale, I was not set up to do anything. I had some IKEA bags. Those were worthless because it's books, right? Too many books. And I ran out of IKEA bags, and I had to start hand carrying things out. Ever since then, I used a cart that fits through every door in America and in tubs that I could stack, and I never have to hand carry a single damn book again out of a door.
Yeah, dude, I think that's so true because you kind of learn the hard way, I guess. But like, as long as
Pain and suffering.
you learn from the mistakes. Like, you kind of, and there's some like you can't catch. Like, I've bought boxes off estate sales, what was it, CT Bids, and like they didn't say that they were in the basement, right? And like,
Spears.
you can't do nothing about some of these, but there are situations where you can kind of make your life a lot easier. And I'm a huge proponent of that. And I think, I guess this probably sounds crazy to some people out there, but like I have a Goodwill bins I theoretically could probably walk to. And I've been there two times and I've lived here for forever, it feels like. And I like Johnny would have to pay me like $200 for me to go sit there all day just to experience that. And that's like what he's saying, right? Can you have a business model based off sitting at the Goodwill bins? Yes, but do you want to have that business model? Do you understand what that business model entails, right? For me, the answer is no, because there's better sources. Sure, I'm not, the Goodwill bins ain't even cheap no more. It's like 99 cents a pound. So even if you get a damn book, like this Bible, for example, like I'm probably paying more like $3 for this Bible than if I just bought it at the actual Goodwill store, right? So like the Goodwill bins around me is not even a good deal. I have enough better sources, even though I pay more, I'm not paying 99 cents a pound, right? So the CD would have been like a quarter instead of paying a dollar at the thrift store. But that's just a whole nother can of worms that I do not want to deal with. Are there people out there that have reselling businesses on YouTube, probably have podcasts and whole courses around making money solely off the Goodwill bins? 100% they exist. It's just a lifestyle choice. And if you have better quality items, I always want you to go for the better quality items, even if that means you have to pay more. If you can't afford to pay more, then grind out the free stuff so you can afford to buy the better quality, more expensive items and make more money.
Right. I mean, you're gonna fight it at first because, yay, I finally have money, and then I'm not gonna have money because I'm gonna decide to make my life easier. And then you're gonna do that a few more times, and you're gonna question all of reality of I'm making no money, but my job's easier. And then all of a sudden you've bought everything you needed, and then you start making money, and then you go, aha, it was worth it. Don't fight it. I'm telling you, just like any business, you're not gonna I'm not going to say you're not going to make any money your first couple of years. You're going to make it so much faster in reselling, but it's going to seem for a hot minute that you're making no money and you're just constantly pumping it back into the business. But give it time and be patient, and your life's easier. And then you're going in after the first, I don't know, I'll say after the first year, your expenses are going to go down unless you decide to where do the warehouse life, unless you decide to do the employee life. And then it may be a little bit more longer, but just for your basics, all your software, all of your like the carts, all your packaging. I mean, my packaging comes from Uline, some other sources, so I pay up for my packaging. Your printers, all of that. Maybe you do have a storage unit. After all of that, after you've done all your initial expenses, because that's what they are, initial expenses, you'll be much better off versus you trying to tough it out and not spend a single dollar to avoid spending money in the first place.
Yeah, and some of these things you don't know till you know, right? But I do remember the days of printing out the label and cutting it with the scissors and taping the whole damn label. And then you finally buy the sheets where it's like 2 4x6 labels on one sheet for your normal printer. Then you get the thermal printer. And it's funny because you see people like myself that are so scared to like buy the Dymo, right? 'Cause I'm like, man, that's $250. I could go buy 250 books or CDs or DVDs. And then there's the other side of the coin where it's like somebody hasn't even sent in their first box and they got like the new Dymo, 25,000 labels
They're
that you
out like
never.
2 grand.
I'm just like,
You just started. What's wrong with you?
it's so crazy. Like there's two completely sides to it. And I'm still the same. I'm still as cheap. I'm the cheapest SOB there is out there, even to this day. And like, whenever Deb's like, I'm like, Deb, I need labels, right? She'll go on Amazon. She's like trying to find the cheapest ones because she knows I'll be like $20 for 10,000 labels. Like, this is setting me back. And I'm just like, I got the money, right? Like, just buy the damn labels that are at least half decent. That's going to make my life easier and they're not going to peel off after I put them on.
Oh, and here's another thing where you can get your most bang for your buck. And a lot of people have thought about, well, they might have, but they dismissed it because they know they're going to pay more. Is we all think thrift stores and flea markets and estate sales to get our best deals. And Mike mentioned earlier, record stores, great. This may blow your mind, people, but there is a thing called a bookstore, a used bookstore is that. And they got books there, believe it or not. Yeah, you're going to pay up. Don't get me wrong, but it is a whole facility of nothing but books. And it's going to be more than the couple shelves you're going to get at your thrift stores most of the time. Another thing on that is it's just lesser known as all. They're your charity organizations that are thrift stores. They're not called Goodwill. They're not called, say, Salvation Army. They're not a national chain. There may be like a couple in your city of different name things. Go to those. Those are great
Oh,
most of the time.
yeah.
And then there's your church rummage sale. Sometimes they ain't the cheapest. It's not a garage sale, it's a rummage sale, right? But I've made a lot of money going to church places too. And yeah, normally I'm gonna have to pay a little bit more than I would at the thrift store, but they usually have great stuff. Usually. Another one is, I hate to say it, your vehicle, depending on what kind of work life you're dealing in. A truck or a big old economy van is much better than like a small Prius car. If you're doing bulk pickups a lot of the time, maybe you need to get a trailer. If you're not doing bulk pickups, you can ignore what I'm saying here. But you kind of have, again, it's an equipment cost. But if you're living that lifestyle, you need the equipment to support that lifestyle. Because making, I don't know, six trips in your Prius versus one with your diesel truck and your trailer is a lot easier.
Yeah, I agree. And this is I'm people don't give me as much crap about it as they used to, but people are like, Mike, why don't you get a truck? And I'm like, I'm not that heavy into bulk, right? Like
Yeah.
I got my two library sources I work with and a few like other ones I reach out every once in a while. But like if I'm only picking up once or twice a month, like and these
You don't
sources
need
know.
it.
Yeah,
Exactly.
they literally have notes in the back of the library, Johnny, that says Mike drives a little car. Let's try to use as many little boxes
They
as we
show a
can.
sample, they show a picture of a box, they show it next to your car.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like, there's an understanding, and you can
Do they
still
give you
fit.
little boxes, Mike?
They do, so I can fit them in the back seat between like the seat and the actual like driver's seat and everything. It's amazing if you have conversations with some of these relationships. Will the truck make your life easier? Sure, but at to what extent, right? Would I be stupid if I went and just bought a truck just to have it for my two pickups a
If
month,
you were
right?
doing it like a 3 or 4 times a week, much different
100%.
story.
Yeah, then we're all in, right? Then I'm getting, the Sprinter van, and that's the life you're going to choose. But it works both ways, man, because I'll tell you right now, there's probably somebody out there that started reselling books and got their first pickup in their Nissan Altima like me and said, wait a minute, I need to go buy a brand new truck. And then they didn't last for more than a month, and you're left with a brand new truck payment for the next 8 years of your life.
Oh, man. Or if you don't want a truck, you still want to drive your Prius, I guess rent the U-Haul thing for the day.
Yeah, there's alternatives to everything, right? Like, you don't even have to label your own items. You can pay somebody, right? Like prep centers, whole business models revolve
Yeah.
around sending you don't even see the item. It goes right to the prep center. They label it, they send it to Amazon for you. But the back end to that is you got to spend X amount, $1.50 per item to have it taken care of. But here we are again, going against your time, me and Johnny labeling the item ourselves. We don't pay the $1.50 per item. We're paying it and factoring that in when you buy an item. Okay, it's going to be an extra $1.50 coming off the actual profit of this item and sending it to a prep center. It's all a balancing act, but you have to figure out what business model you are and what you want to do based on your time and your money, your capital, and then you can start making these decisions. But they have to make sense at the end of the day.
Right. And the biggest one I've seen people fight, and Mike still fights me on this one, is when to get an employee. Now, to be fair, Mike has a couple of employees, just mainly on the YouTube side. And it's when you can make more money with your time if you weren't doing a mundane task. Like for me, photography. I make way more money by not doing photography than I would doing photography myself. Way more. Because they can photograph while I list or I'm busy doing Amazon boxes or something else. You shouldn't get them early on. Again, you need a few bucks in the bank to even consider that. And have you maxed yourself out? Do you have more than one day's of work that you could do? Do you have a week's worth of work that you could do or a month? And then it's probably start time to consider an employee to help you catch up, even on a part-time basis. Or a one-time thing to try it out. Because some people, once they try it, they're like, no, I'm not good with people. They hate me. I made them cry. I can't do employees, which is fair. Maybe you can't do employees. Then you can make a business set up for a solo person. And it's really hard to judge. But again, the two indicators to me is you have more work than you could possibly do yourself, and there's no end in sight. Like, you've got a rotation of sources. You got to keep those connections going. And you may need somebody to help you because else you're always going to be constantly behind. And you need money in the bank to pay this person. If you don't got money in this bank because you're blowing it all on inventory that you can't process yourself, it's not humanly possible. You've done your business wrong. You need to refigure some things out.
You're right, dude. I mean, you hit it on the head with me, right? Like, I don't consider you an employee, but like having you do two calls every single month, it gives me that extra free week of not having to do a call. But at the end of the day, I know when people sit down with you, they're getting the correct information that actually makes sense. It'll help somebody. It's not like it's kind of like if you hire an employee and they're clueless and you just keep them on just to
Yeah.
keep them on, right? It'd be the equivalent if I just hired somebody to do a call, so I don't have to do an extra one, but the person is absolutely clueless and they don't even have a real business. And it's the same with my YouTube editor. I edited my own videos probably for the first 2 years before I brought him on, and like he can do it in probably a tenth of the time I can, right? Like he's much more efficient than me sitting down here trying to figure out. I will say I've learned to edit it videos because I had to, right? It was just me in the beginning. I had to figure this out. But I grew the YouTube channel to a point where I was making money so I can afford to pay for him, right? And it's the same with you, right? I pay you out of the money I make from YouTube. So it's like, all right, I have the money now. What can I do to get my time back? But if anything, the experience gets better for the person, right? The person watching a video on a video he edits is going to be edited better. It's going to be fancy. It's going to have better graphics, better sound, everything. The same with the coaching calls. I'm 100% Amazon. Okay, well, I have a book selling, media selling group. A lot of people are passionate about books. Johnny knows a lot about books. He's got an eBay business that he operates. People get more value from having Johnny do two calls a month than me doing four calls a month, because it's a different side of the business that a lot of people dabble in. So it benefits me, not just with my time, but it also benefits the people that are actually getting the quote unquote experience, I guess.
No, you're absolutely right. And versus Mike trying to learn things about books and have book knowledge, which he doesn't want to do. He doesn't want to be skilled in that. Just like, I'll take it a step further for everybody listening. Like, you learning how to develop a software to make something in your reselling business more functional, you're better off hiring somebody that's skilled in development to do that for you. You're going to pay a lot of money for it, but you're going to spend so much of your time trying to learn that stuff yourself. I know we got other things like ChatGPT, and we can kind of cobble together something, but maybe you should just hire the specialist to develop it out the get-go, or hire some VAs that are cheaper US alternatives to do that for you, or a combination thereof. Like, maybe you do the initial run, but all the hard technical gluing it all together that you got off of ChatGPT, that's safe for the VA to do. Like, you're the idea person, and you're giving them their idea, and they run with it and make it a reality from your idea.
I got one that's on the top of my mind, and it's not really controversy, but it's kind of what's going on lately in the eBay realm with the AI listing softwares. I'm curious, what do you feel like somebody should be at some point in their business before they start using this? Because I think people see this as a shortcut, and I think it can be in some cases, but I think in the majority of cases, it's not a shortcut at all. And I think the new sellers, I guarantee you, Johnny, since all these eBay AI listing softwares have come along, I guarantee you there are sellers out there that have never actually listed and owned their own item on eBay and have used only software.
Yeah. Okay. It's a good, I like this question. So you got to know what you're doing to know what the AI is not doing. If you don't know that and you're just using the tool because it's a tool, you're going to have some things wrong with it. I just started recently using one and I know what's wrong with it. And so I let it do its thing, but I have to go back and do the corrections. But if I didn't have the knowledge I had from all my hard years doing eBay, I wouldn't know what to correct and I would just let it go and it'd probably sit there. Like, maybe the title structure is out of order, or maybe it's missing it. Maybe it uses a keyword like green when I could use a much better keyword like neon, that makes it sell faster. Or instead of horror, I put creepy. You got to know the certain nuances of your category in order to use these tools. Will they get to the point where that's not needed? Probably, but it's not today. Not by a long shot. Also, before you consider listing software, paying for it, you're going to say, oh, wow, $75 for 1,000 listings? Question mark. Are you doing 1,000 listings? Because that breaks out to about 7.5 cents per listing. But if you're not doing 1,000 listings, it's much more. It could be 30 cents a listing for you, or 80 cents, or, I don't know, $75 if you do one listing. You got to justify the volume of these costs of these tools as well. Because if you don't got the material and or the work ethic to list what you bought, you've wasted your money, in my opinion. You got to be set up for it. You got to have the material, and you got to put in the hours to make it worth it.
Yeah, I think a lot of new people see it as like this ultimate shortcut. And I think it's exactly what you said. I think it's the biggest trap, because you never really understand what the platform expects or what it wants, right? Because you never went and listed an item and then it didn't sell for a month. And then you went in and you changed this one thing in the title, or you add an item description, and then it sells within an hour of you changing it, right? So then you learn yourself, okay, this is what I did wrong. But if you just rely solely I guess then you could just blame it on the software, though, right? Because if I'm a brand new seller and I just only use software and the business sucks, I can just say, "Oh man, this AI software is the reason that my business failed."
Right, I'll equate it to something like this. We all know what 2 + 2 is, 4, right? The person who doesn't know how to do simple arithmetic has to use a calculator. They don't know how it got to 2 + 2 is 4, but what if that calculator said 2 + 2 is 5? It's wrong.
Yeah.
It's the same thing here. You got to know when it's wrong. And I don't think a lot of people do that are using it today. And they're, like you said, they're using it as a shortcut. So they're putting up a bunch of listings that 2 + 2 = 5 on eBay, or worse, 2 + 2 = -5 on eBay.
So that's like almost the complete opposite of what we talked about, right? Because essentially you're paying up because you can list the items for nothing yourself. So you're paying up to have the software list the items. It's saving you time, but it's not doing it properly. And dude, one of my biggest pet peeves when I worked at CVS, if we're going to do something, we're going to do it right the first time. Because if I have to send somebody back to redo the whole damn planogram or redo it myself, I'm going to be pissed off about it. My biggest thing is if we're going to do it, let's do it right the first time through. Even if it takes us a little bit more time, we know that it was done in a way that actually is in the best possible outcome that we need it to be in.
Right. Don't use it unless you know what it's doing, is my main point that I'm going to make. And don't do it if you're like the 10 a month lister. It's not worth your money because you're going to go 7.5 cents a listing. But when you bought 1,000 listings, it's not really 7.5 cents a listing. Those are my two biggest consider it before you do it suggestions.
Yeah, and if we kind of wrap it up here, I'll kick it back to the idea of, get inventory for cheap or nothing. You're not going to be perfect, right? Me and Johnny, you go pick up a carload of books. You're going to suck, right? This is your first free pickup. You don't know what the hell you're going to do with this stuff, but you figure it out along the way. As long as you're progressing towards something, you don't always have to be. Some people love free pickups. Even if it eats all their time, they love the thrill of just not knowing what they're going to get from somebody, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. I just challenge everybody to make the most amount of money reselling. And if we can spend money to make more money, then that's where we need to be. And sure, you can mix it. If you have the itch to do a free pickup, they're always going to be out there. But if your sole purpose is let's make as much money as we can, sometimes you got to kind of push it to the side for the time being. And maybe in a slow season, we can get back into it. So, Johnny, what's your final thoughts on this topic?
Know where you're at in your business so you know what you could do to get your time back, even if it means spending a little bit more money to do so.
100%. That covers it. Like, you gotta know your own business, and then you'll be able to decide where your money is best spent and where your time is best spent. So, we'll talk to you all in next week's episode.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Resellers Mindset Podcast. Today's full episode and all previous episodes are available to all YouTube members, along with the weekly Zoom call and private Discord. Head on over to youtube.com/theusedbookguy and consider joining for as little as $2.99 a month.